gentle ones, blessed ones, children of the Most High, I am the one you have called Mary, Mother of God. And I am, and you are. It was a most wondrous adventure, having the one that you know as Yeshua to be my offspring in that life that is so famous, and to do a bit, and a very small bit, of molding and shaping this one who has had and has chosen the incarnation. He was quite lively, and still is, as you can tell, because when he comes and he talks with you, he's quite into the energy of the body and of moving and up and down and touching and ruffling the hair and et cetera. He's very much what you would call in your language interactive. He was very active as a small one. Even before he was born, he was very active. And those of you who are mothers in this lifetime and or remember other lifetimes when you were, you know how it feels when the one inside of you growing decides that it, he, she, is going to be active. And it's like all of a sudden, something is happening. And it is most wondrous miracle. Those of you of the male gender in this lifetime, you can cast your mind back to times when you have been the one who gave birth to the small ones. You have been there, done that, so there is nothing truly that I will speak of that you cannot relate to. When he was growing up, and small to begin with, many, many questions, always wanting to know, how? Why? When? Especially the whys. And at a very early age, he learned to read so that he was in touch with the wisdom that had been provided for him in that manner. And from the very earliest of times, he knew himself to be one with the Father of all, not only Joseph, and there was a very good relationship there, but with the Father of all creation, created and uncreated in form. So there were times when perhaps Joseph and I would have questions, and he would know the answer. And so he taught us as we were teaching him. It was quite interesting, but having been trained in the Essene culture in that lifetime and several lifetimes before that, same as you, Joseph and I knew how to stand back and to receive the flow of energy, the flow of answers, and the flow of questions. This one who comes and plays with you, who will ruffle up the hair and who will walk amongst you and comment about various things. He knew his oneness from the very earliest of times. And the ones that he played with in the village, he taught them by example as to what life is and is all about. Because some of them, as you have had it explained to you by various ones in this week, some of them were right on the cusp of wanting to know, and they were open to being teachable, to be shown the miracle, such as the bird that one of his fellow playmates had said, "The bird has died." And Yeshua went to the bird and picked up the bird, held it in his hands, and breathed upon it, because you have to do something in the outer. And the bird fluttered its wings and flew away. And his playmates said, "How did you do that?" And he said, "I did not do anything. I knew that there was life ongoing. I knew that one only has to suggest with the breath, the gentleness." And the winged one took off. He was very good at playing with the round thing you call the ball. Okay. Because, again, he knew his oneness with the ball. He came into that lifetime with a small bit of advantage in that he knew that there is no separation. You think of something, you visualize, and it does. So the ones he played with were often asking, "How do you do that? How did you do that? How did you make the ball that was thrown, how did you make it go so far?" And he said, "Well, I just looked and it went." Okay. From a place of knowing non-separation, of knowing that I am everything that I see, I am creating it. So if you wanted to go to the end of the grassy knoll, you just give it a hint and off it goes, so he said. So his playmates had a great time with him because they never knew quite what to expect, except they knew that it was probably going to be a little unusual. But you know, the miracle of it all was they understood, because the ones he played with, as they were small, they were teachable as well. At the soul level, they had chosen to be his companions. And so they were at a place of openness, a receptivity, I guess you would call it, a place of show me. And if you show me, and you can do it, then I can do it. This is what they were thinking. And they did. Because there was, luckily, even with the mothers and fathers, no one in the small hometown, what do you want to call it, the village, okay, who did not understand expansion. This was something that we had been exposed to in the teachings, and something that we knew to be possible. Did not mean that we actually had walked that walk yet, but we knew it to be possible because the ancient writings expressed this. And all of us, as we came up through the Essene teachings, and we had to copy them, we had to write them out, and I know that Yeshua has explained to you, even in something you still have extant, in this day and time, known as the Lord's Prayer, and it talks about, "Give us this day our daily bread." And there was a sentence after that that had to do with the water to drink, and whoever was copying it, it was their lunch break. They went off to lunch, and when they came back, they picked up at the next line down. So you have, yes, it happens, doesn't it? But he has come and walked amongst you, and he has reminded you that you went away, fine, lunchtime. You came back, and you picked up at the next line, and the line was, "You give freely of the waters of life." But it did not come down through the ages. So whenever you say what is called the Lord's Prayer, you can fill that in for yourself. Know that truly there was a following sentence in there about the water of life. Yes, he asked me every once in a while when I go to speak, especially with the ladies' groups and whatever, where I'm invited. He says, "Please let them know that there's a line that they can fill in there." So in some time, you will call it probably future, there will be a revised edition. Although it does not need to be written, because it will be here in your knowing, in the mind. But his growing up, it was a lesson for him in adjusting to the physical world, understanding the formation of the molecules of energy. He was very much the budding scientist, and his questions, same as yours when you were small, why? How? Well, can't that be better? That was the next question that came after that, yes, and you did that. Quite often you still do that.
Yeah.
Many, many questions. And it is true for all of you, because that is why you are here this week, sharing with each other the various play shops that you have, because they are not work, the play shops that you have. You are wanting to exchange what nuggets of wisdom can you share with each other. And you are open. You are not set with the blinders on. Now, there have been lifetimes when you have gone through a lifetime, several of them, where you have had the blinders on because you have said, I will see only what is straight in front of me, and maybe not even that much. There have been the lifetimes when you have put on what you call the sunshades, and everything was tunnel vision and dark. This lifetime you have said, no, I want to see the light. I want to know and feel and walk in the light. I want to know the scenes that you are. I will share with you a small bit of, I do not often do this, but I'm going to take pride in suggesting what your topic this year was going to be, your spiritual ancestry. So that you would remember that you have walked the walk and you have walked the talk as well. And you have known in the heart of you who and what you are, the love. So often the brothers and sisters are looking outside of themselves. You know this. You have done it yourself in the lifetime. And you have said, oh, if only that one will look at me and appreciate me, I will fall at his feet.
Yeah. It didn't work.
It didn't work. All you get out of that is usually a bruised nose. But in a moment of love, when you look upon another one, even though you are asking for them to give, supposedly, it to you, you are in a place of love. And you are giving to the other one acknowledgement that they exist. You see them. It is a very good line, I see you. It is a very good line to practice, to know the truth of it. I see you. Not only the physical form, but I see the heart of you. I see the eyes that come alive, that radiate. I see the vibration that you are. And then you do the most wondrous miracle because you put the vibration seemingly outside of you. In other words, you have to push down on something. Aha. There's a secret here.
A big secret.
It's not turned on. Not very loud. Oh, much better, much better. Yes. You have, first of all, the idea of what you are going to play. You would not even need, truly, the notes in front of you. You know what that is going to sound like even before you press the keys. You can hear it. Yes, and that is how the song, the singing comes forth. You hear it already before you do the tones of the voice. Same with all of your musical instruments. It is thought that you have to have something physical to work with, and that is where the miracle happens. But the miracle happens before you touch the, what is called the key. Ha! Huh. Interesting, your language. The key. Before you touch the key. But know you where the key is, truly? Key is within you. Ha! Huh. Remember that. Everything that you bring into manifest here, perhaps, or that you can see, such as a painting, a photograph, something upon your screen, either the big screen or the smaller screen, or the screen that you hold that's about this big. You carry it in your pocket. It's always with you. And then you put it onto what is called vibrate, and it tickles. I have seen that happen. Your technology that you bring forth, you see it to be in the outer, and yet, where does it begin? It begins with the idea, it begins with the trust of knowing that it's going to happen. And oh my goodness, if it doesn't happen, there is an energy that rises up after a while within you, and it's, why isn't this working? I have seen that happen as well. But, and you throw it, yes, plenty of energy as it goes across the room. Yeshua had much curiosity. He had knowing around him that he could pull information from. Now, was this only for Yeshua? No, you do it as well. You pull from the energy of beingness, truly, the answer that you're looking for. And sometimes, because you like a small bit of drama, you keep it at a distance. And you get into a place where you say, well, I'm not worthy of it. Somebody else is wiser than I. I'll have to go and ask them. And you do that, and you say, yeah, you know, I had a clue about that, but, etc. And after a while, begin to trust yourself, to know that the answer is truly around you. All you have to do is stop. This is one thing that Yeshua shared with me, because I was a very good Jewish mother. I knew the rules. I knew how to do the cooking. I knew how everything should be in the Jewish way. And if he would step outside of that, and he did, I would remind him. And then he would say to me, breathe. Exactly. Stop. Yes, stop already. Breathe. Because being a good Jewish mother, I had plenty of energy. And there were times when I allowed it to be expressed. Okay. His growing up was for him an adventure. His growing up was for Joseph and I, me, I, for I, well, whatever. It was also an adventure, because he knew how to open wide the shutters of the mind that could be closed, and all of human nature has known lifetimes when it has been very much the tunnel vision, and anything else outside was not even recognized. But the scenes from which you have come were ones who knew the bigger picture. We wanted to know more. We wanted to have the companionship of the angels, the ones who were not in form, but in energy, and to feel their blessedness as they blessed us. To be able to talk with the trees, the plants, the flowers, as you do in this day and time. You go up to a certain growth, and you speak to it, and after a while, if you are wise enough, you shut up. My beloved friend that I knew in that lifetime, and you know in this lifetime, Judith, she found that out after several months of talking to her tree. Speak back to her and say, I'm glad you have stopped talking. Now I can talk. And it did. You find this in your communication with the smallest of small, such as the one who is fascinated by the small snail. You have one in your group, not present quite this evening, who is fascinated by the snail. Yes. And you will take to her my blessing. She and the mate of her are coming through a most wondrous drama that they are writing as they go along. It is not written already. They are writing it, same as you are writing what you call your future, as you go along. So it was the same with Yeshua. Seeing him as the small one, seeing him as the taller one, seeing him as the master that he became because he absorbed the ancient teachings very easily, very well. And we spoke, because of the teachings, we spoke of possibilities as to how that lifetime could go. And there was a knowing as you work with certain things of what you call your future, and there is a feeling of possibilities, and then a possibility may seem a little more strong, and yet it is not a truth because it hasn't happened yet. But we spoke about the possibility that if he did not stop the, quote, heresy that he was preaching, there was a good chance that the powers that be would want him to be silenced. And we spoke of various measures that might happen. So when we came to the place of the crucifixion, that was something we had talked about. It was not a surprise. It was, yes, in one way, a surprise that that was actually the road that was going to be taken. But we had considered, because we knew, possibilities. We did not know how and when. That was yet to be unfolding. And yes, even though with what you would term the foreknowledge, to see one's firstborn upon the cross, with, again, Yeshua shares this at your certain holy time, called your Easter, I believe, that the nails that are used are great, huge spikes, this big, this round, huge. They have to be to support the weight of the body as it hangs there. And as your scientists have said and told you, it is not that ones die from the pain. It is because the weight of the body closes down the breathing apparatus, what you call the lungs, and the breath no longer can happen. Now, he has shared with you that which we had talked about. That which I stood there at the bottom of the cross, back a little ways. After all, it was, you know, they said, clear a space, clear a space. Okay, so we cleared it. I watched this, and I knew what was happening. But I also knew, and I trusted, that he would remember, which of course he did, how to take the consciousness outside of the form, outside of the body. And he could observe what was happening. You can do that as well. You have one in your midst who decided that he was going to take off a couple of the appendages, the fingers, and he did not faint. In fact, he was a bit surprised, too surprised to pick them up. So when he went off to see someone who could do something with the spurting of the blood, take care of that part, it was a bit messy. The look on his face was quite good. He left the fingers on the floor. He figured, well, I don't need them. And quite true. He's getting along fine. I felt, as I stood there and watched Yeshua, watched the body, I could see his energy apart from the body. And I knew that he had taken the consciousness from the body, because it was something as Essenes that we had talked about, studied, hadn't practiced, but knew it could be done. And we had masters who had written about doing it ahead of time. So as Yeshua will share with you, I'm sure he has, that he knew the procedure and he had practiced with masters in what you call the Far East, although if you're there, then you call this the Far West, I suppose. Whatever. He had practiced taking the consciousness outside of the body. So he knew to do that. And yet, I had the mother's feeling of not wanting him to leave. Now, he had promised, and he had talked about, if this happened, that he would come back. And we had made arrangements for meeting in the upper room where we had often met as a small group. And yet, as a mother, I took that information the way you would take the information, with fingers crossed, as to, please, I even did. Now, this is supposed to be magic, okay? And the magic that it does is to allow you to breathe, to take yourself back a step. Whoops, there's always something behind me. To take yourself back a step. And be able to observe as you go through the experience. And you know how to do this. You have practiced with this, not the crucifixion, but how you can, if you happen to be, and I have seen you all do this, in a certain discussion with someone, and there's very heated emotion about it, and you really feel very strongly about what you are saying, and you know that you are right, okay. And then all of a sudden, you feel that you can step back from it. And it's like, huh, look at what we're doing. And the energy changes. You know how to control energy. So when he reactivated the body and he came to meet us in the upper room, there was great celebration. And yes, he kept some of the signs so that we, if there was any doubt about it, we could know that, yes, the body had been through something. Okay. Living with a master is a great challenge. And you all do it because the one that you have chosen is a great master. And there are times you have seen where he will, what is the term for this? He pushes the button. It is true for all of you who are in relationship. Doesn't matter if it's male, female, whether it's male, male, female, female, friends, whatever. You have certain ones at certain times that will push the buttons, and you get into thinking and maybe expressing a bit of energy. And then all of a sudden you realize, oh, it's like I could be up here watching, and this is just really comical. And the most surprising thing that happens is when you burst out laughing and the other person is taking it very seriously, and there you are laughing.
Yep.
You know that feeling.
Yeah.
Yes. And it changes the energy completely. Because the other one looks at you and is like, what are you laughing about? And then everything changes. The lifetime where I was Mary. I want to talk to you about the name Marie. It is a combination meaning royal one. This is the very ancient derivation. Marie, royal and of feminine gender. So you have a lot of Marys. You have a lot of Maries, and a lot who are the most wondrous beings who do not understand that that is their nature. Not yet. They will. And then some of you get your name changed partway through your lifetime by someone else who says, oh, that's not your name. Yes, so you get a new name. A new nature, perhaps. But the lifetime that I spent with Yeshua was a teaching lifetime for me. I thought I was teaching him. He was teaching me, as he has taught many. But the most wondrous part of it is not past tense, but present tense, the love that we share. Because truly, as he has joked, we go everywhere together. And then he turns around and he says, you know how it feels to have your mother with you all the time? And I laugh, because there is truth in it. Bless I to be with you in this way, and to be able to share some of the laughter, some of the blessedness of that lifetime. So meantime, I bless you. Know that I walk with you always. You have been my companions in lifetimes when we once again brought forth the form, different bodies, played together, argued together, and laughed together. Know that always I go with you in love. So be it. Beloved friends, peace be with you.
And also with you.
Thank you. It is good to remember the ancient sayings and the oneness. I am the one you have called Mary of Magdala. And I was, and I am, and I will go through what you call time with that name. However, it's not the only name I've ever had, same as with you. You have had the incarnations with different names, some of them more famous than others. And this one for me has gone down in history, but a bit, in my terminology, warped. Yes, I was from Magdala, but I was, because of the patriarchal society and the ones who were writing the histories. Have you ever thought about history? H-I-S? His story? Okay. It's a clue.
You mean it's biased to the male gender sector of the world?
Yes, definitely. And in some civilizations, to borrow a phrase from my beloved mate, in a galaxy far, far away, there are the her stories. Okay. Because, as you've recognized, not all civilizations are civilized, and not all civilizations have been masculine-dominated. This one is coming out of that pathway to more of a balance meantime until it swings over. Be prepared, those of you of the male gender. It is moving the needle a bit, which is going to go past center at some point. But then, if you desire, you can be of the male gender, the female gender, you can change, and you will, as you have. I had a most wondrous lifetime that is so famous in its own way. I was raised in a very rich household. My uncle, Joseph of Arimathea, was a very good businessman, and he had a shipping trade. Several of the large ships that would travel between where we were, near Mount Carmel, up to Britain for the metal. And he would get that from the Isle of Britain, Britannia, at that point. And he had quite a trade going, so that there was plenty of money, golden coins, as Yeshua likes to speak of them. In my family, as I grew up, I wanted for nothing. I had everything. And I thought everyone else did as well. So I had the scholarly ones teaching me from the time I was very, very young. And I was, in your terminology now, I was doted upon because I was a cute little thing. And I was pretty. And to have a little doll-like thing running around and learning and interacting, I was a bit, I will not say I was spoiled, but I was definitely doted upon, given everything. All I had to do was to ask for something, and immediately it would be there for me. But I was also taught appreciation, so that I didn't feel that everything was owed to me. I had, in that day and time, being in a good Jewish family, I had discipline, and I also had a certain amount of chores, as you now call them, duties around the house, so that I could grow into a most accomplished young woman. So, and I thought everyone had this. And when I was in my early 20s, first of all, from the time that I was, I don't know, do you have this saying in your world, knee-high to a grasshopper? Uh-huh. Okay, it's somewhere in the air here. I just picked it up. Okay, from the time I was knee-high to a grasshopper. How big are your grasshoppers, by the way? Yeah, right, okay. Interesting saying, all right. I loved learning. I loved asking the questions and hearing the answers and then following that thread a little farther with things. And so when I was in my early 20s, I was sent to India to study with masters there. I knew culture from different countries as they would come through, and with my uncle being in the shipping business and not just what do you call circumscribed as a small unit, There was plenty of international, trade, yes.
Interaction,
yes, discourse. So I had the advantage of a lot that as I was growing up, I didn't realize not everybody had. I thought everyone did. I found out later. But in my early 20s, I was privileged to go to India to study with the masters there. And I met this most good-looking, handsome male, man, young man, studying the same as I was. Very serious, and yet every once in a while he would say something humorous. He was a little bit on the shy side, and so was I, because I had been taught not to put myself out there and be too available. But okay. But it was the kind of thing that when I first looked upon him, there was a feeling of energy that happened, and he felt it as well. And yet we knew we were both there to study. So we did what I'm doing right now, backing up. Okay. Friends, thank you. Friends, yes, but the inner attraction that we were feeling, we kept at a certain distance. Because I had been so nurtured, I knew music. I knew how to play the musical instrument that you now call the lute, I believe. Anyway, and I could strum a bit, and I could do a bit of the song. And so I often would do this, and he enjoyed listening. Things have not changed too much in the interim. So it was as a certain energetic clue that seems to repeat itself generation by generation. We were attracted to each other because there was a love of learning, a curiosity of knowing what the ancient ones had found as secrets, and we wanted to know all we could know. So we studied, we read manuscripts that were in what one would call a foreign language to us, but we had studied the languages and the written history so that we could decipher the writings and the manuscripts. And there was a certain, what do you call, chemistry between us. But we left it at that. He had a certain course of lifetime which he knew that he had to follow. He could not tell me at that point, or for himself, he could not say, this is how it is going to unfold. But there was a feeling, a calling that he knew he had. And the same for me. I didn't know what it was going to be, but I had certainly had the advantage of studying much so that I felt I could travel, and did, in various parts. And there were friends who would open their homes, such as you do in this day and time, and invite me to come and stay, either for one night or for maybe perhaps half a year, and be with them. My travels were eye-opening for me, because I would be carried on what you call the litter that I would sit upon with the gold trappings of pillows and whatever at my back, and someone or several would carry this that I got up on and sat on the cushion and was taken somewhere. And we went down these roads, dusty roads. And I would see, when I looked out the curtain from time to time, I wanted to see what was up there. I wasn't supposed to. I was supposed to stay hidden. But I would push open the curtain from time to time. And I would see families living by the side of the road. No dwelling place, nothing to keep the weather off of them, but just an encampment of a family, small ones running in front of the litter that was being carried. And how did they live, I'm asking myself. And I saw young girls, with very elderly men, making what you would call the family unit. And I'm thinking, how can this be? They haven't studied. They haven't had a chance to read some of the ancient books. And they're only small. Same thing with the boys. They were young and they're out there tending whatever little plot of land that perhaps they were chosen to work, to do something with. And I'm thinking, but they should be studying the books, all of the writings of wisdom that have been handed down. They're missing all of the ancient teachings. I thought everyone had the time and advantage that I had of studying. I was in my early 20s. And here are these ones, maybe 8, 10, 12 years old. And their life is pretty well set into a pattern that they're not going to escape from. I could see this. And it did not look right to me. That was when my heart started to open. Up to that point, the mind had been opened by what I had been studying. I could tell you time and place where something was written and what the idea was behind it. I could tell you all of the ancient history and the legends, everything that had come before me, seemingly. I could tell you all of that. I couldn't tell you how to watch the seasons and when to plant and what to do to get out there and scrabble at the dirt with the fingernails. I had beautiful fingernails. I couldn't imagine that these young girls were out there scraping away at something. And when they would be finished for the day, the nails, they would be down to nothing. Or sores on the hands, the arms. It was such an eye-opener, if you may want to call it that, that people had to live. We're living this way, not within a most wondrous home, house, with many rooms and servants to do everything, and a specialty of ones who knew how to cook the most delicious meals and bring it to me. Okay. So, very soon after I got back home, as back to the lifestyle that I had known, I asked my uncle, would he build me a house? I wanted my own house, and I was in my early 20s, and so, okay, I suppose if I'd been even 10 or 12, he probably would have, well, he might have made me wait. But anyway, he said, of course, he would build me a most wondrous home with many rooms in it, because I said I need many rooms. And he understood that was because as a young maiden, I was probably thinking of getting married and having the small one, so I would need something with many rooms. Well, that was not my plan. My plan was to ask some of these young girls to come and live in the house with me, and I would teach them how to read. I would teach them how to cook. I would teach them another lifestyle that they did not know, but they learned very quickly. And I would teach them to take care of their nails. Small point, you are thinking. It was a big point for them. They no longer had to have the bruises on the hands and the great welts across the back if they didn't, quickly do what they were supposed to do. I did not know until I saw this on the trip back from India on the roads. I did not know. I could not even conceive that people would be living in such lack, in such a way as to actually have to scrabble from the dirt of the soil and to tend a small bit of land that they would fight to the death to keep, and yet spend all of their time, energy, without tools even. It was incomprehensible at first. So I asked these young women to come and be with me one at a time. I didn't go out and just harvest a whole lot. Because they had families, and they were attached to the families that they were with. In other words, there was a feeling of family. So not every girl wanted to come and be separated from the family. But the ones who had already been dismissed by their family, and the family had said, sorry, but we don't have enough food to feed you. You'll have to go and find your own way. And many of the girls, what did they have to trade? Their body. So they did what they had to do. And as I speak those words, you can understand. The female gender in this evening sitting here can feel in the anatomy what was being of some value. In other words, enough that they would get their meal. And I invited them to come and be with me in the house that my uncle built for me. And my uncle was surprised that I was doing this. But he also had the heart that and eyes that had seen much of the world. And he knew that the way these girls had to live up to that point was not the easiest, was not really the best for civilization. Because if a child came forth out of what they were doing in order to have some sustenance, a meal or whatever, the child then was a burden. And what were they going to do with the child? It was difficult to find an answer. So I did not run, as has been told about me, a house of prostitution. I actually took ones, and as you would call it now, who were living on the street, but it was more a dusty road, and have them come and be with me. And I could teach them some of the ancient stories about how our culture was an ancient culture, a culture that they were worthy of knowing. So that which I had been gifted, I gave to them. And there were many who, in time, learned something that they could do, such as the cooking, where they could then go to a more wealthy place, home, dwelling, whatever, family, and they would be part of that family and have a service to give. Not just the body. That is still known in this day and time, where you have the girls who understand that this that I have is worth selling if there isn't something better. And so they learn to value the mind, the voice. They learn to do the healing work. It opened a whole world for them beyond the scrabbling in the dirt. And as I have said, when they were at a place where they had a service that they could give in another household, they moved on, made room for other ones to come in. Okay. So as time moved on, and as luck would have it, this handsome young man that I had met in India was getting quite a following of ones wanting to hear what he had to share. And much of what he was sharing was what he had learned in India and some of the other places where he had traveled. And much of what he was sharing was, again, on another level, changing people's lives. There was an excitement about life itself, of being alive and knowing a wealth of history behind. So he was doing the same as I was doing, but in a different way, because he was, well, as he still puts it in this day and time, he had good press, good publicity, and ones wanted to know, what has this one found? What does he have to share? And so his grouping was growing, because ones were wanting to know, is there something more than what I have seen to be life? Is there something more? And so ones would come to the place where you have your writings about the multitudes that came. So it just happened that we met up again. And there was a rekindling of the heart chakra, and the feeling that perhaps there was something that we could, should, would do together. And so I went to my uncle. He went to his family. And we said, we feel that we are being called to be together and to somehow, we use these words, to serve the Lord, to serve a higher purpose. And so we said, we want to be married. And so we were. We did. The wedding feast that is written about, where the young bridegroom turned the water into wine. Guess who? Yes. And yes, I was there. And so I came into the family with the one you have just heard speaking, Mother Mary, great Jewish mother-in-law. Ah, blessed be.
Blessed be.
Yes. She had very strict ideas about how a family should and would be, and she tempered it with love. In other words, she was a very loving mother-in-law. We became very good friends. So it was not a divisiveness. It was not that I was taking her son away, but that he was bringing me into the family. And so we put together the families. Okay. So when you read about the wedding feast, the wedding at Cana, that was my wedding and his. There is a wealth of treasure in what is yet left in your histories. Much of my part has been written out because, well, it was patriarchal and I could not be seen as having power. I could not be seen as having equal power with my husband. Yeshua would not be married because he was all in himself. So the story goes. But what he was all with was the oneness of us together. And it was a perfect marriage. Now, did we ever squabble? Oh, of course we did. I was raised in a good Jewish family. But it was always tempered with love. There is a saying, there is an admonition that is very good, wise words, to never go to bed on an argument. Always settle it, and your sleep will be deeper and better. It was a wonderful sharing. He has, in the writing about him, it was written that ones would call him rabbi. And in the Jewish faith at that time, in order to have the designation as rabbi, you had to be married. A clue that some of the ones revising the history missed. But yes. So when we came to the time of the crucifixion, again, as you have heard from Mary, his mother, we had talked about it, the possibility that if you don't temper this down a wee bit, the authorities are not going to be happy with you. And he said, but I must speak. I must speak the word of the Lord, the master of all, the oneness, the Father, Abba. I must speak. And so we said, yes. Not without some inner misgiving, I guess you would call it. But we knew that to be true. Mary and I were great supports for each other because we both loved the same one, of course, different ways, but we loved and supported and understood. Because the teaching, the Essene teaching that has been talked about, was preparing for Yeshua and also his lineage. Did he have children? Of course he had children. He was a man. I was a woman. We were attracted. We were quite normal and natural. So after the crucifixion and after the resurrection, it was not safe for the disciples to see him resurrected and walking around, and to see me being with him as if nothing had ever happened. And so the disciples were being rounded up and being questioned and tortured if they would not tell that which the authorities wanted them to say. Because they would tell the truth. Yes, he was dead. The body was deceased. It was in the tomb. Yes, he came forth out of the tomb. Yes, he walked with us. Yes, he talked with us. They didn't want to hear that because it didn't make sense to them. Couldn't be true. This one who went out on the hillside and taught to ones and said, life is a gift from Abba. Treat it as a gift. Be in joy. Joy is your nature. You've heard him say that in this day and time. He knew joy. I knew joy. But it was not safe after he resurrected the body. And so we went to my uncle once again. Joseph, we said, it is important that we leave. For the disciples and the multitudes who have followed him, it is not safe for them to spread the word that he is still among us. Can we go on one of your ships to Britain? And my uncle, being a very loving uncle, he said, of course, you can. So we went on one of his ships. We went, as the story goes, and it is a truth, to the southern part of what is now known as France. And we lived in the small villages there, learned the language. We were good at languages. And became as part of the village. And when it was seen that we did not age, the same as the villagers, we said, well, you know, our ancestors were long-lived ones, etc. But after a while, they began to add up the years. And so you have heard this story from Yeshua, that we would say, well, there's family in another area, and we have to go visit them, and we would travel a good, perhaps, week's journey away so that there wasn't too much. Now what you have with your technology that is so instant, it would be a wee bit more difficult. But in that day and time, if you went like a week's journey away, there wouldn't be too much of the discourse back and forth to give ones a clue. And so we would stay in that village for a while until, again, it became a bit apparent that we weren't getting the gray hair of whatever. We weren't aging because we knew that one does not have to age, which is why you, at your age, do not look your age. It is with your ancestry. And it is true for many of you in this room, many of you who will hear this story. All of you at heart are young at heart. Only way to be. At least it's the most fun. Right?
Yep, it's great.
Very good. We travel together. He corroborates. It's very good.
Still non-disclosure, though.
This is true. Only when called upon. Very good. Very good. So when Yeshua speaks with you and he tells you that he lived the 600, 700, 800 years, yes, we did. After a while, we had traveled everywhere. You have the legends of his traveling in the southern parts, of traveling this country, traveling across to the part that is called now the Russia, I believe. Anyway, any of the area of the world, because we knew our oneness with all the brothers and sisters, no matter the color of the skin, the shape of the eyes, the shape of the forehead and the chin, whatever, we knew all are of the Father. And we knew that there were teachings, legends in every culture that we wanted to know about. So we went and lived with them and traveled.
An adventure.
Definitely an adventure. Mm-hmm. All of life is meant to be an adventure. So that is my story for this evening.
A good one.
It is my history. Her story.
Her story.
Her story. Right. I will say to you that the times are changing. You have felt this happening. And more of the female energy is rising up to the place where there will be a bit over the balance, and then it will come back to a balance. So never fear. You will be okay. You will be okay. So be it.
So be it.
Back for a minute, please.
Okay, she says okay, yes. You have a question?
I would like to clarify something.
Yes.
She calls Joseph Arimathea her uncle.
Yes.
Was it her mother or father who was a brother to Joseph of Arimathea?
Her mother.
Her mother. Okay. And Joseph of Arimathea was Mother Mary's brother, so it was also Jeshua's uncle.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Well, I suppose it would have to be.
So it was all like one family there. How is it that you did not get to know Jeshua until you went to India?
Ah, that is a very good question. It is because I was raised in a very isolated upbringing. I did not play with the village children. I didn't play outside of my uncle's mansion. I did not know that there was a world outside of this very large house that we lived in.
Oh.
I did not know. I mean, I didn't even think to ask.
Okay.
I mean, we had, within the walls of the house, we had an extended family. We had what you would call nowadays the servants. We had people to do the laundry, the cooking, anything, cleaning, whatever. I didn't have to do any of that. But it was like a small village within the house. And so I didn't know.
Thank you.
He was doing his own thing.
While I'm here, I got one more.
Okay, ask.
So you went to France with Jesua.
Yes.
But do we have a couple different timelines crossing here? Because from one angle, the story is that you stayed in France and died there, and your tomb is there. That's one story. Is that a different story from you traveling for 600 years with Jesua?
Well, first of all, in the 600, 700 years, we could travel everywhere and come back to that area because we felt, what is the feeling of the heart? A rapport with actually the energy of the small mountains there. So, yes, it is true. We did travel. We went through France to Germany and onward, so forth, around. But if you... I don't know how you figure. Time is sort of slippery. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But it seems like in the one story, we only hear of Mary Magdalene in France and that she hung around there and nothing about Jesua.
Well, we tried to keep some of it quiet.
Okay, I'll let you off the hook.
Did you all have children before the crucifixion?
One, yes.
Was that Sarah?
Yes.
Sarah? What about Sarah?
Sarah.
Oh, yes.
What about Benjamin? Was there a Benjamin?
Well, yes, of course.
I thought he was first.
No, sorry. That is the male interpretation, but no, Sarah was first. It also has to do with what you will know as genetics, and that quite often when ones get together, not being practiced at being together, oftentimes the female gender is born first. You've seen the diagram with the little things, sperm, egg, whatever, swimming towards each other. Quite often the female gender is a faster swimmer.
There was a Benjamin then.
Oh, yes.
And when was he born and where?
In France, actually, after we got to France.
Okay.
So you were pregnant during the crucifixion?
No, actually, Sarah was born before the crucifixion.
Okay. Yeah. And what about that story of you coming to wipe his feet with your hand? Was that all made up, of meeting Jesua and crying and wiping his feet with your hair and anointing him?
It is made up. However, I loved him that much that I would have done that. And I did have very long, beautiful hair because growing up, we had the oils for the hair, you know, being rich. Okay. Yes. So I was well taken care of. So I did have long hair, which I had to bring up. Otherwise, it was getting all in the way. So that the story could be true. But in actual fact, in my remembrance, no, I did not do it.
Did they try to stone you?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, several times.
And you just disappeared?
Yes.
What happened to the house after you and Jesua got together, the house with all the girls?
It stayed as a house of refuge, yes. And even to this day, there are foundation stones still there.
Wow.
There was much of love in that house, in the stones. And it is not as a house in this day and time, but the foundation stones are still there.
May I ask of Joseph of Arimathea, what became of him?
Well, in truth, very quietly, he ascended because he was interested, as many in the family were interested, in the truth that Yeshua was teaching. And the truth that you are now coming alive in, understanding that you create everything moment by moment. And that which you, as you were getting towards, even before you put your foot in front, you are creating that which you're going to be stepping on, and you trust that it's going to be there when you put your foot down. So there were many who actually ascended in a quiet way. In other words, they didn't go out on the mountaintop and say, hey, look at me, I'm going to ascend.
Right, right.
There is a story, you know, about Yeshua's ascension. Well, others, very quietly in meditation, just allowed the body to disappear in light.
Thank you
for asking. I am glad that you do ask questions, because it allows me to fill in things that, you know, I'm not addressing in the beginning.
Did you ascend too? Did you leave your body?
Oh, yes, of course. When I was finished with it, yes.
So you ascended.
Sure. But I reincarnated after that. You have a story about that.
As Joan of Arc?
As Joan of Arc, yes. Because I wanted to know. You see, my lifetime and my understanding of truth, of being able to create as you go along. But I didn't know the feeling of being burned at the stake. I didn't stay long with it.
Went out and watched?
Yes.
Was it the whole thing?
Yes. Yes.
How did you live the 600 years? Did you do the anointing in the sepulchres and you just wait and said?
No, we did not do that. It was not necessary for us to do that.
Really?
It was her path.
So you lived the 600 years just because you lived the 600 years?
Because we traveled everywhere, yes.
Because you were just in joy and kept going.
Sure, why not?
But you could have continued if you wished to.
Yes. Yes.
Enjoy
yourself. Yes, it is most interesting, because there was one morning that we arose with the sun. It was most beautiful, brilliant sunshine. Such a joy to behold it. And we realized, I am the sunshine. And in that moment, the body was no longer needed. And we went with the sun.
Together,
yes. You know the feeling when you meet one and you are one with that one, completely one with that one. And even if they leave the body, if they, as you call, die, always their energy is with you. And you find yourself thinking of them. You find yourself talking to them. Mm-hmm. And this is what proves the truth of your being, that there is no separation. There is no death. There is only the energy that sometimes takes form. And when you are finished with the form, you still, as Yeshua says, you still be. You still are. Now take that to bed with you tonight.
Did Mother Mary ascend with you too?
Yes. Not with us, but she did on her own, yes. Well, with some other ones. There were, in that time, after Yeshua's demonstration, there were what you would now call ascension parties.
Ooh.
Oh.
Now there's an advance.
No, not unless you've actually fulfilled that which you have said, agreed that you would do. Well, beloved ones, it has been my great joy to be with you. And thank you for your love, thank you for your questions, and thank you for your knowing. So be it.
So be it.
Come
again. I will. Oh. Wow.